May it please the court. Counsel for the state. My name is Thomas Brandstrader. I represent Robert Klebanowski. I did in the district court with co-counsel Mr. Blagan, and I did in the state court on the underlying felony conviction. Jails are dangerous places, but as this court has said and other courts around the country have said, that once the defendants, sheriffs, the various counties accept the responsibility of maintaining order for inmates, they accept an obligation. We are here following the granting of summary judgment on behalf of the defendants, and we are asking this court respectfully to vacate that order.
You said you represented him at the law?
Hello, Judge, in the state court.
Yeah. In whatever, did you have discovery?
In the state court, yes, Judge.
Was there some discovery about Smith and his supervision, and when he left, was there something? Is that routine? Is that a policy? Is that something that was aberrant?
Not underneath, Judge. Not in the state court murder conviction. We don't receive that type of discovery of the jail.
Well, I'm just wondering if, because this is what's alleged. That's what I'm trying to figure out. What happened there?
Well, Judge, one of the things that after this assault in September 2002, Mr. Klebanowski did file a grievance. And the grievance was, the only response he got in the grievance said it was under investigation. And after following his conviction and his sentence at the Department of Corrections, he moved me to file the suit in federal court.
The civil suit?
I'm sorry.
The civil suit?
Yes, Judge. We are asking the court, this court, to look at the district court summary judgment and find that the court ignored certain facts that was before it through the discovery process. Most importantly, it ignored the allegation or the allegation in the Second Amendment complaint that the county jail's policy of leaving these tiers unattended for any amount of time was a policy, although not written, it was widespread, it was spoken to by our client, and it was the implication of this policy on September 9th, following the September 8th assault on Mr. Klebanowski by these very same individuals, which violated Mr. Klebanowski's rights.
Any of the guards who were actually, who were potentially personally responsible parties here?
Judge, we think under this policy of leaving these tiers unattended that Officer Smith was.
Either yes or no. Are any of
yes.
the guards?
Yes, Judge. At a minimum, Officer Smith, who was told by Mr. Klebanowski of the beating that he wanted to be moved.
I thought Smith was no longer involved, that he'd been dismissed on limitations grounds. Was that?
I don't think that was ever addressed on the district court, Judge. As to Jermaine Smith, who was the guard on duty on September 9th.
So the problem is that the defendants are arguing that Smith should be dismissed on limitations grounds, and then you didn't file a reply brief, so I assume that point was conceded.
Well, Judge, in the lower court, our response to that motion is that...
At least I correctly understood that you didn't file a reply brief.
Yes, Judge.
Well, that pretty much concedes the point.
Well, other than in the district court, our response was that there was the limitation period would only start to toll upon the acting of by the defendant on the grievance, which never occurred. Mr. Klebanowski never got any written response or had any hearing on the grievance that he filed on September 18th of 2002. But the district court, in finding summary judgment on behalf of the defendants, Judge, ignored, did not ever mention the policy that we raised in our Second Amendment complaint about the unattended tiers. And that was an important point to us. For one, Officer Smith's testimony first, that he wasn't violating policy when he left the tier. Then he admitted that he did leave the tier. And then in a subsequent hearing that he had with internal investigations of the Cook County Sheriff, he said, while I was there, I saw the end of the attack on Mr. Klebanowski on the 9th, and Officer King was with me. Officer King, in his statement to internal investigations, said he did not see the attack Mr. Klebanowski on the 9th was not with Officer Smith and only heard about the attack later. The district court, in finding summary judgment, and I say this with all due respect, it's hard to read that judgment and find any inference that was made on behalf of the non-moving party. In fact, the judge pointed out in the only mention of the unsupervised tier situation, said that it worked against Mr. Klebanowski's position, that Officer Smith said he wasn't there that day, indicating that that somehow took care of some notice. But the notice had already been given to Officer Smith. The notice had already been given to the defendants. The court ignored the fact that after the September 8th beating, where he received 8 stitches and went to the hospital and was brought back to the tier, he had this conversation with these 4 officers. He physically described them. 2 of them, we finally learned, were Trezio and the second name escapes me. But the defendant, the plaintiff, did the best he could in describing these officers. They knew about the beating. They told him there's nothing they could do about it. He then talked with Officer Smith the next day.
Did he identify the assailant?
He physically, he did not, Judge. He told these 4 officers that he would if he could be transferred. The reason, in the record, is that the assailants told Mr. Klebanowski on September 8th when they were beating him into the hospital, you tell the guards, we're going to kill you. The district court did not infer that fact in favor of Mr. Klebanowski. The district court treated that as he didn't complain. He did complain. And if you can imagine the position of a person with 8 stitches in an ear and a broken nose on September 8th, it's difficult to accept Mr. Klebanowski's given statement that he slipped in the shower. Even as an interrogatory, the transporting officer expressed disbelief that that's how these injuries occurred. But when he came back to the tier on the 8th, he saw the 4 officers outside the tier and explained what happened. They knew about the beating. The next day he asked Officer Smith, move me, I'm scared. Did he ever point out the 3 individuals to the 4 officers? No, he didn't. Did he ever point them out to Smith? No, he didn't. But Smith says, I know about the beating. I know what's happened. There's nothing I can do for you. We think the district court ignored those facts set out in our second amended complaint and Mr. Klebanowski's interrogatory.
And Smith's leaving the what do you call it, cell block? What do you call it?
The tier. They call it a tier in the division.
He told everybody, I guess this is routine. You open the doors, they can watch TV or go to the day room or whatever it's called.
Yes, Judge.
So they're sort of free to move about within the tier, I guess.
They are.
Without supervision.
There is a windowed office on each tier where the guard sits.
Is that where Smith was sitting?
That's where Smith was sitting.
And he left that?
Yes. And he announced on September 19th, announced that he was leaving.
Is that routine?
Our belief that the policy is that they leave these tiers unattended on a regular basis.
And what is the record for this sort of thing happening on those many days that they've left? Is there a history of violence during these periods? Did you find that out, or was there any ability to find that out?
Yes, Judge. And from our client's interrogatory, where he spoke to what goes on in the tiers, the accumulation of weapons, the free rein run by the gangs, when the guards leave, and that if you are a non-gang member, you are at risk. What is perplexing about the granting of summary judgment in this situation is that I don't think it's undisputed that after knowing that he had been beaten into the hospital on September 8th, and after being told by Klebanowski that he had to be moved, on September 9th, Smith not only tells me there's nothing I can do for you, but announces at 9 o'clock, I'm leaving. I'll be back in a little while. There was nobody else there. And this violent, vicious assault occurred. And Klebanowski said in his interrogatory, the assailants, the 3 guys, knew that he had complained to the guards. He jumped from one tier down to the bottom floor to escape these 3 individuals who were stabbing him with a shiv. He hit the panic button. Nobody came. The district court treated this as one injury, one assault. It was not. On September 8th, when he was beaten for not giving up his commissary, there was no guard there, and he sat in his cell for an hour and bled. And after that happened, and after he complained about it and told the guards about it, the same thing occurred on September 9th. The policy of leaving these tiers unattended, run by the gangs with their stash of weapons, in this case, when they acknowledged that Klubinowski had been beaten by these three guys, leaving that tier on September 9th and announcing that you're doing it, violated Mr. Klubinowski's rights. We think the district court ignored these facts in granting summary judgment. We are not asking anyone to cure the ills of an 11,000 inmate correctional facility. We are respectfully praying that Mr. Klubinowski gets his day in court. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. Mr. Gallagher.
May it please the court. Your Honor, I believe that you're correct in pointing out originally that Jermaine Smith is, to be our contention, is no longer a party to this action. We raised the argument of statute of limitations at motion for summary judgment. The district court deferred on that issue, citing that there was not a material issue of fact. We then again raised that issue at the appellate level. Plaintiff's counsel or plaintiff did not respond. Moreover, the only allegation made or put forth in plaintiff's appeal is a Monell claim against the Cook County Department of Corrections and the general supervisors. He has offered no evidence outside of his allegations in his complaint and the plaintiff's deposition that there is an overriding policy of leaving the tier unattended. In fact, his statement of facts alone in the appeal cites to his complaint 18 times. What you do have, Your Honor, and what was submitted in his appellate appendix is a policy or guideline for tier officers. And within those responsibilities that are laid out for the tier officers, one of the requirements is that they have a visual inspection of the tier every half an hour. And according to plaintiff's own testimony and timeline, that's exactly what Jermaine Smith did. At 9:20, he announced that he was leaving and let the inmates off or out of their cells. The attack, according to the plaintiff, occurred at 9:45. Approximately 5 minutes later, a half an hour later.
Why does he announce he's leaving?
Well, if he opens the doors and states that he is leaving, he's giving the inmates permission to leave it, to go into the day room, to go to the washroom, to take a shower, to walk around. But as far as unsupervision, I'd like to take contention in that because there's also evidence in the record that at Cook County Department of Correction, Division 11, which is one of the newest divisions that we've got, there are tier setups. And in those, there's four tiers in a box setup. And with the middle of that tier, there's a tower or pod. And within that tower, there's an officer who has a panoramic view of all the tiers that they survey. Okay, and that panoramic view is unobstructed. That officer is there always an officer on duty. That officer has radio contact throughout the division and throughout the jail.
Did he see the assault?
No, he did not. And, well, actually, I cannot say that because, Your Honor, the only deposition we have is the plaintiff's. There was no deposition of the individual officers, no deposition of the official directors, no deposition whatsoever. So the facts that the court had to make a decision on at the district court level were limited, to say the least. There is no evidence that there's a overriding policy of unsupervised care of these inmates outside of plaintiff's own testimony in the single incident. There's no testimony of an overriding policy of shanks or weapons being available outside of the plaintiff's own testimony. There's no testimony or evidence of gang violence versus non-gang members or neutrons outside of the plaintiff's own testimony. And based on that, we believe, and before the court is what is accordingly the Monell claim, it's woefully insufficient, the evidence that's brought forth, and we believe the district court was correct in finding so.
Now, are there records of some sort, or videos or other things that go on? When I hear about this, obviously I'm not familiar with the inside of a prison, but it would seem that when the prisoners are free to move about, with all the things you've said, that's an occasion for, could be an occasion for violence or extortion or many other things. Is there some history of reports or something? Apparently this wasn't requested or discovered. But it would seem that if there's going, if there is previous incidents where this has been a problem and nobody's doing anything about it, that might be some reason the policy is bad.
And I would agree if that if there was evidence in the record of those prior incidents, but there aren't. Especially in this Division 11 where it is maximum security, it is within the guidelines and the policies and the responsibilities of a tier officer in order to leave the tier for certain times, to go to the washroom, to grab a maybe a drink or something like that. But there is constant supervision from that pod above, and there is constantly an officer stationed in that. And it is not an old-school jail. This is, for us, a very high-end pod where they have access.
When you talk about constant supervision from a pod above, it sounds like you're talking about one of Jeremy Bentham's panopticons. One wouldn't describe that as a modern invention.
You know, they've had the roundhouses at IDOC in Stateville for, 80, 90 years. So it isn't a new invention. But we contend...
Rather predates that.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm not familiar, but... it is our contention that the supervision is there. There is no testimony whether the officer in the pod saw it or not. That was never sought after.
Does he tell them they're leaving, or is that just...
It is practice to say that they're leaving. I mean, it's not practice
to say that you're
free to free to go about the tier. I mean, it's not that he sneaks out at the tier to get a drink of water or to go to the washroom in order to disallow or trying to hoodwink.
He was gone for a while, though.
He was gone for, according to the defendant's testimony, approximately a half an hour, which, again, is allowed within the policy and guidelines that were provided in the record. And, again, with the caveat that there was a officer stationed at the pod which had supervision over the tiers.
Well, I guess it would be your contention that if that's, there would have to be some evidence that we'll call it policy, I don't want to call it driven, but that policy accepted absence, you'd have to show that there's violence that occurs in the past, and they knew it.
That, of course, Your Honor. I mean, all it would take is, a record of disciplinary reports against officers or a record of incident reports against officers establishing that...
Of stuff going on where there's been fights or whatever.
I agree with you completely, Your Honor. We have none of that.
Are there any data about where and when intra-inmate violence in this prison occurs?
I'm not familiar with it, Your Honor, unfortunately. I could only assume that,
I'm not really interested in assumptions. Are you saying, my question is two-part. One is, are there data in this record?
No.
All right. The other is, are there any published data? This is the kind of thing that criminologists spend their careers studying. One would think that in a big jail, there would have been studies of where and when the risks occur, because in order to design an intelligent policy for where guards are needed and how you supervise, you need data. Now, one would suspect that there are studies of this by criminologists. Are you saying that there are none?
I am not saying that. I'm saying I'm not aware of them, Your Honor. And plaintiff cites Jones v. Sheehan as a case where a district court where it went...
I'm not asking about cases. I'm asking about professionally done studies by people who understand statistics.
I understand, Your Honor, and I'm not aware of any.
Okay.
It would be our contention that based on the fact that these individual officers, the statute of limitations claim was not addressed and therefore waived, and that they did not bring the individual claim against the officers in the appeal, that they are out. And that's what's in front of the court is just the policy argument itself. And as I stated before, the lone deposition of the plaintiff, coupled with a one-sheet or two-sheet policy of the responsibilities of a tier officer, do not remotely establish that there is an overriding custom policy or practice that leads to or led to plaintiff's injuries. And with that, I would, if there's any other further questions.
How long has that tier arrangement, this new facility, been in existence?
6 or 7 years, I believe. With that, Your Honor, thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.